My name is Dan Brown. I'm here today with another A Lens a Day conversation about information architecture. And today I get to talk to the indispensable Andy Vitale. Andy, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, awesome. Always great to connect and chat with you, Dan.
So we've been talking about information architecture, and I'm really curious about how folks who do IA, who lead IAs, think about the IA process. And I wonder if we could start there, and maybe you can talk to me a little bit about how you imagine or how you work on IA projects where you're really trying to understand the problem space. I think IA problems are maybe unique among user experience or design problems in general. What are some of the ways that you or your team try and get your arms around the design challenges that you are working on?
Sure. You know, Dan, the one thing I would bring up in that too is there's different levels, as you know, of maturity of IA. And in a lot of organizations, especially product organizations that move fast, sometimes the IA work, if it's embedded in that day-to-day, that business as usual, it has a tougher time making progress. Because when we look at some serious IA work, to me, that's a lot of upfront discovery. That's a lot of understanding. It's understanding intent. It's figuring out how to organize information. And when a team is building, like, it's really hard to introduce that. But like, stop the presses, like, the structure is wrong. But we have to. So we've been trying. We actually, for that reason, we put our IAs in our research team. So a lot of that early upfront understanding structure, understanding process, understanding how information makes sense and being able to validate that made total sense for us, because we weren't able to get that traction when there's, you know, a handful of IAs and there's something like 10 or 12 different product teams going. So we've been using that as kind of a feeder into understanding structure and identifying things. So one of the things that we're doing now too is starting to look across just like Rocket Mortgage, right? So we have Rocket Mortgage, we have Rocket Pro, we have a couple of other entities also. And it's like, what is the mental model? What do people expect? And the process of uncovering that is really doing lots of like conversations and audits and looking at information and card sorts and the process. Like, it's hard to, I hate to nail a process down other than the way we typically talk about our processes, because we've learned through a series of what I would call Pinterest fails. You just can't follow the same recipe for everything that you're trying to solve. Otherwise, you can't go after every problem the same way. But for us, the IAs are really like, they don't only help us with navigation and structure and taxonomy. Like, they help us really uncover lots of structural things throughout the organization and our ecosystem to understand what makes sense from a how data flows perspective, and then how information is perceived and how information is then digested and what that looks like. So they're not only helping us with like on-page IA, they're helping us literally like across product IA.
That's amazing. What a unique perspective. And it really gets me thinking. Can you talk a little bit about, I love the idea that IA sits in the research organization, because in some ways it shares a mindset with right. that research organization, rather than the day-to-day sort of, let's call it, you know, agile track design, right. where you're pushing features out. That is important work. However, it is a distinct way of organizing work from IA or research, which requires maybe slower, let's just call it what it is, more deliberate, more exploratory type approach. Can you talk a little bit and maybe shed some light on how an IA pairs with a researcher to try and pull that together? Is that the model that there's kind of a pairing between the two, or do IAs do their own research? How does that work?
So it's because our IA team is small, but it's a work in progress and it varies. So a lot of our IAs have done research work. So if it's specific to IA research, then they will probably go ahead and do their own research. If it's something that requires, you know, a little bit deeper research methodology, they'll partner and pair with research. But the reason it makes sense to be structured there, like we had talked about, is because that deliberate process, right? It's something that we want to understand deeply and also get it right and mitigate risk. And I think that for us, if we are building products, there's a level of risk that we know that that research and our IA team is kind of mitigating, but at the same time, it's a launch and still learn process, where when it gets to something as detailed as information architecture, if you get that wrong, like those effects to the brand, to the product, those are long-term lasting effects. And we want to make sure that we're getting these things right. And it's easier to say, okay, we validated this, our confidence is high in this, now add it to the roadmap and do it. This way it's, you know, something like changing nav structure. If you do it in an iterative way, it's going to be so jumpy for people. It's like, oh, today this is under this item, tomorrow it's over here, like I'm lost. So we do want to understand that as much as possible and nail that down.
That's awesome. I'm curious, have you led or sat in on workshops with, say, subject matter experts or business folks where you see this really clicking for them? What was that experience like, where you kind of see maybe someone on the business side or a subject matter expert, someone who's not involved in design day to day, kind of see the light bulb go off for them on how important this underlying IA work is?
Yeah, you know, I see it with product managers and I see it with executives. And the two main areas I see it are at two different altitudes. I think being part of a card sort activity and seeing some of those results and how different their individual perceptions are of where things should be grouped together, or, you know, just the mental model of what's clustered, it varies so much that they understand there's a science of pulling all of this together and making it make sense for the majority. I think the other level is really around when we do some readouts of some of these structured like pieces of data and information that are wider than just on the page of how organizations, if we map out like how data travels through like our Rocket Mortgage interface with our Rocket Logic like ecosystem that drives that through automation and different processes, when they see that all together in a map that's clear to understand, those light bulbs go off and they're like, I get this and I want this for this too, because I don't understand this space as well. So it is exciting to see that those light bulbs go off at two different times for them, or two different altitudes.
That's awesome. Is there one light bulb moment that you can share with us, something that some connection that someone made recently that that really kind of shed some light on a particular problem or challenge or opportunity?
Yeah, you know, so our company is large. Our family of companies spans multiple companies, and we often see you know, things are grouped certain ways, and we're starting to explore what makes sense for different team members depending on where they sit in the organization. And as we went through that exercise of clustering, like, is this a service for humans? Is this a, you know, something like Workday, where does that live in the process? Something like our automation for our team members, where does that live? How do we organize these things? Watching them see how people, especially when you have open fields to group things and what you would call them, just watching them see like, oh, I would call this employees. No, we don't call it that here. We call them team members. Or like, no, this is benefits, or this is like home benefits. And just seeing the different variety of choices that we present to our team members every day and how to logically group them was completely like eye-opening for the team to see.
That's awesome. So I feel like that's a good transition to the lens that you picked. Can you tell us what lens you picked and maybe describe it in your own words? And then what about it resonated with you?
So the lens that I picked was how to include who benefits, right? So to me, we're talking about structure, and our organization, we have these beliefs, we call them isms, right? And always for us, It's funny because we say it's not about the who, it's about the what. But at the end of the day, our goal is, and you know, our CEO says this all the time, like every client, every time, no exceptions, no excuses. When we think about who benefits, it's people. But it's not just like one set of users or one set of people for us. When we think about our organization, we've got people that use our products, and they're a mix of consumers or like in our wholesale broker space, these are people that provide mortgage services to clients for a living. So there's a B2B and a B2C component. But beyond that, there's a team member side of like who's interacting with these clients on our side. So we've got three sets of distinct people that use our products differently. But at the end of the day, like everyone has to understand these structures so that they're easy. Whether you're working on the system, whether you're building the system, whether you're using the system, whether you're providing the service the system offers, like that has to be clear for every single person that's using it the same way and consistent. So it's super important to have a structure set up that enables that.
I think one of the points of this lens is to help uncover internal biases, right, or compromises, maybe is a better way of thinking about it, that you make where you design a structure, ostensibly it's for a consumer, but you realize that you've sort of compromised that vision to maybe benefit someone in-house. I think we, you know, this may not be true at your organization, but certainly we've all had the experience of we include a specific label because it's important to the business, even if it's not important to the consumer or meaningful to the consumer. Can you talk a little bit about how you navigate those compromises, how you help your team consider and think about those potential compromises that they need to make?
Yeah, you know, and I think a lot of that also ties to our relationship with our content team as well. So when we talk about distinct labels, there's a lot of times, especially for our professional users, we use some industry jargon, or every now and then an acronym that we use in-house makes its way onto, you know, one of our pages or one of our structures. And it's like, wait, is this really clear? How can we communicate this in a way that helps people understand? And for us, like, we have to realize that the process, the mortgage process, or the what we call the dream of helping people buy a home, that is something that's really important to people. And helping them understand and be confident through that process for them, or when they have to potentially dial in or address it with someone that works in-house, like that language has to be specifically the same. And those labels and the way they find things has to really match their mental models, right? And in a way, it's clear for them as well. So, you know, for us, the trade-offs are around really like education. I think that sometimes, you know, if you're in this industry for years and it's all you live and breathe, like it's easy to just get lost in the jargon. It's not just this industry, it's every industry, right? So having that team that really understands and is able to connect to the humans, that the people that are actually using the system, is so important to communicate that out. It's like, I hear what you're saying, but is there a way that we can say this so everybody understands? And for us, our design team is new, relatively new. Some folks have been here for years, but this, like where we sit in the organization and the size and scale of our team is still, I would consider, new. And we have that fresh perspective and that fresh set of eyes, and the company welcomes it. So we have to be the advocate for like, this is the right structure because we're validating this on a daily basis. And we may have used this other structure for years, but people, and not our full subset of people that use our products, understand it. And, you know, we've gotten a lot of success from the organization in understanding that.
I really liked what you said about pushing the team to think about how can we say this, or how can we structure this so it's meaningful for everyone, so everyone understands it. And I think on a practical level, we know that that might be a little bit of a aspiration, a pipe dream. But I think taking a optimistic view of the work that we do, pushing ourselves to strive for that, I think ultimately leads to better products. I think we need to balance it, right? We need to be realistic. Like if we try to be everything to everybody, we will ultimately fail because everything will be so dilute and meaningless. But if we sort of aspire to make concepts accessible to everyone, make different categories have labels that are rendered in a language that are meaningful to everyone, that if we push towards that aspiration, we will ultimately create a better product.
Right, 100%. And that is not just the team that's building it, it's understanding every single type of person that will be affected and making sure that they're either part of the team that's building it or part of the people that we're validating that with. Because so many times we do miss, certain types of people, and there's bias that we don't realize that we have, and we need to make sure that our process is able to support that too. So when we do talk about, when I say everyone, I mean everyone that uses our product. So our products are somewhat distinct, but at the same time, we have to understand every single type of potential person that does use that and their backgrounds and their experiences so that we can make sure that it's clear for them.
So the reason why I created these lenses is because I think it's sometimes hard to get feedback on the IA work that we're doing. As you said, it's deliberate, it's slow, it's abstract, right? Sometimes it's hard to find people to help engage it. So the purpose of these was to give the designer, give the information architect a foil, right? A means for critiquing their own work. But it can be still hard to do that. And I wonder if you were counseling or coaching a designer on making use of this lens, making use of the Who Benefits lens in looking at their own work, what advice might you give a designer as they think about who does the structure serve most?
Yeah, I think I love these lenses because they're a way to not only kick the tires yourself and validate your thinking and help you understand, like, just question, did you go through the right process? Did you think about the people that it helps? Did you think about who benefits from it? Did you think about, like, how they could change a potential decision? So for us, at some point we think, but at some point we obviously have to ship it. We have to deliver the thought. So this is just another, like, deep check. And I would love, like, to me, these lenses are not only used by the designer to self-check, but it's used by the leader to come in and kick the tires and just kind of reinforce, like, hey, are you thinking about these things? And it's so important. And if the designer looks at it and has gone through that process, then they're there. But if they don't, then there's another check from the leader to, like, make sure that we've thought these things through. And it's so important for us to just make sure that we, as designers, as IAs, as anyone in this profession, we have to make sure that we're not just, like, trust your gut instinct for sure, but double check it, right? We know that we're making assumptions and we have to validate them.
I think we will end it there. That was a fantastic little bit of wisdom. Thank you very much for that. Andy, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. Great to be on.